Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining me this evening. I want to welcome you to another segment of our Healing Through Hurt Internet Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Maria Wall. I am going to just jump right in tonight because we have a very interesting and controversial topic tonight. And I want to tell everyone that when I presented this to several people, our topic tonight is, when is it okay to hit a woman? Tonight, I'll be running solo for a while. It would appear that our co-hosts are running a bit behind this evening. So if you'd like to give us a call, 646-478-4726, our lines are wide open. I'm going to start off by giving us some announcements, and then we're going to jump right into the show. As always, I want you all to remember to check back often because we do have some great shows coming up in the future in the next few weeks. So check back often on our website. And if you'd like to contact us, you can email us at contact@thewallfoundationinc.org. Healing Through Hurt is a program that is offered through the Wall Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to call us on the phone, any of our hosts, either Autumn Coleman, Rebecca East, or myself, Maria Wall, you can give us a call at 443-865-4211 or 1-877-619-6884. We're going to run through some of our legal matters, of course, our disclaimers, the views, statements, and or comments of show guests, callers, or hosts do not necessarily reflect the views or beliefs of the Wall Foundation, Inc., or Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. These comments are those of our guests, callers, and hosts alone. Therefore, Wall Foundation, Inc., and or Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio is not party to nor liable for resolution of issues between show guests, callers, hosts, and or listeners. Okay, so much for that. We're going to do something else new tonight as well. I've been getting a lot of people requesting how they could get little shout-outs and things like that on the show. But one thing that I'm going to do, because I'm an avid reader, is there's a book that an author is trying to have published. It's called Mr. Nobody Smith: One Man's Journey to Significance. It's an inspiring story of the life of Reverend Dr. James H. Smith. He's no longer with us, but this is a gentleman who overcame a lot of obstacles and, you know, plowed through many hurdles to become a wonderful husband, father, and man of God. The author needs 1,000 signatures for the publisher to agree to publish the book. So if you're interested, you can go to www.leslie.payne.com, and you can look for the link to Mr. Nobody and sign up for the mailing list there. And you can get the information on when the book will be published. We're going to be reading to her to get those 1,000 signatures so that the author can have that book published, because it is pretty good reading. You can see excerpts from the book there as well. Tonight, our topic is extremely controversial. It is, when is it okay to hit a woman? Now, when I first was presented with this, I said, that's a good topic. I said, but I wonder how most people would respond had, with me just throwing it out there. I got a lot of stereotypical responses as well as a lot of negative responses as well. Again, our number, our caller number is 646-478-4726. If you'd like to chime in and give your opinion on this topic. When I asked the question when it's okay to hit a woman, one of the most popular responses was, well, a man should never hit a woman. A man should never do this. And I said, okay. I said, this is a typical response that pretty much I got from, you know, across the board, from one person to the next. Hold on a moment. Here to have someone chiming in. Give me 1 minute.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, it's Rebecca.
Hey, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. I just told our listeners that I was here by myself tonight because no one had come in yet. But glad to have you with us. I was just filling in our listeners tonight that what this topic, of course, you and I have spoken about it, is when is it okay to hit a woman? And I was explaining to our listeners that the majority, actually everyone, started with a man should never hit a woman, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, this topic is much deeper than a man and a woman. I said, it's a multifaceted question and a pretty loaded question as well because in an instance where the mother may hit the daughter while, you know, talking and being kind to her son, or vice versa in that situation, or same-sex couples. You know, is it okay for one female to hit another female? Or what if the woman is the abuser and she pushes the man too far? Is it okay for him to protect himself or hit her then? These are the topics that, you know, I want you all to think about and give us a call. And if you've been in a situation like that, give us a call and tell us your story. Again, our number is 646-478-4726. So, Becca, I know that you had strong feelings about this. So I guess you can give our listeners a little bit of insight on, of course, your initial a response to it after we, you know, and then I got into it a little bit deeper with you to explain what the topic was really all about.
Which part are you speaking of?
When is it okay to hit
right.
a woman? Right. Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people had the first thing out of the box was a man. And I said, okay, it runs deeper than just a man slapping a woman around, you know, and then I started throwing out the different scenarios. So, you know, you can enlighten our listeners how you felt when you first initially, you know, thought about the whole topic.
Well, when I first read the words, when is it okay for a man to hit a woman, my heart honestly dropped and I thought of all the possibilities and what that could mean. And it brought me to a point where I can say, 28 years old, I've never been hit with a closed fist by a man. However, I have hit a few men, and those men were 100 pounds bigger than me. And I guess when is it okay to hit a person, another person, is what you're saying. I hit those people because they got in my bubble while they were walking towards me, you know, that much bigger than me. And so I think oftentimes people, they react on emotion when they hit another person. And is that okay? No, I don't think it's ever okay to hit another person. I think that when you're in a scenario and you feel that you have to hit that other person, I think that that relationship needs to be severed. But as far as children and being hit by their parents, I also have experienced that, and I don't believe that's okay. I believe sometimes it's okay if those children endanger themselves, but oftentimes when parents hit their children, it's out of anger, and it teaches our children to react, and I think that's a real problem that our society is dealing with right now. I think people should be honest with their words.
Yeah, I think that one of the scenarios that I had put forward was I actually had a group of people who were talking about it, and I had jotted down some notes all week to what some people had said. One thing that an older individual had told me was that if a young person was raised in an older family by grandparents or someone like that, you know, they were taught, you know, that, well, back then, you know, women didn't have the voice that they have now. So it was a little bit different back then, the way that people responded to what we now call domestic violence. And another scenario was, you know, a lot of younger people had brought up the Chris Brown Rihanna situation and how unless, you know, Rihanna was prepared to go back to Chris Brown before a lot of her sponsors had threatened to drop her had she done that because they had a reputation to uphold. I guess the question is, and then, of course, someone had posed the question, well, what if the woman was the aggressor and the man was in bed asleep and she came in with anything, a knife or gasoline and a lighter or something, and she was threatening him harm. When is the line crossed when it becomes acceptable to defend yourself, even though he's the stronger stronger physically. He may be weaker mentally, spiritually, and every other way, but in that situation, would it be okay for him to do whatever is necessary to save himself? Or some people say, I had one person tell me, well, he just should just roll across the other side of the bed, get up and leave. And I'm like, you know, it may not be that cut and dry if the other side of the bed is up against a wall or something. And this woman is standing here with a weapon and something that could really kill him, you know, what do you do? And another question is, sometimes you have same-sex issues where, you know, people say the man, the man, the man. I say, well, suppose the other partner is a woman. Does that make it right? Does that make it wrong? Does it, is it more justifiable because they are the same sex and of equal or closer to equal strength and, you know, force. And a lot of people, once they got off of the male-female thing, had different opinions. But, you know, it was interesting how so many people had contacted me this week. And, you know, some people had said that they wanted to call in and chime in on it. So, again, if you're listening and you'd like to chime in on this particular topic, our number is 646-478-4726. But I have had a lot of interesting comments, you know, within the week's time of people, and they had very strong opinions. Some were not willing to bend, some, and it was odd because I found that a lot of females were actually justified reasons why a man should be allowed to hit a woman in some circumstances. One of the main ones that had come about was, well, you know, some women don't know when to shut their mouth, some women don't know when to get out of a man's face, some women keep nudging him and pushing him until it's the point where he pushes back and then she's ready to cry or sulk. Again, if you've been through this type of situation, give us a call. Or if you've done it to someone, or if you've had it done to you, where someone laid their hands on you or you laid your hands on someone, give us a call so we can try to talk through this scenario and see what's going on. Again, our number is 646-478-4726. You know, I think I've only experienced it one time in my life, and it was not closed fist, it was open hand. And the minute that he did it, I proceeded to call his parents and tell them to, and this was many years ago, I proceeded to call his parents and his father answered the phone. And I said, you know, I'm just telling you, your son just hit me, and you might want to, I'm going to give you the phone so you can say goodbye to him because I have every intention of killing him. So, you know, it was one of those situations where he left, and then I proceeded to call my mom and cry to her. And he just hit me, and I'm going to kill him if I catch him out there on the street, you know. And I called the police, and he had already walked very far. I guess they caught a bus or something. I don't know what the scenario was for that, but for me, there was no going back after that. There are some things that are just things that I will not forgive, and that's one of them, especially when it was totally unwarranted. For me, that was my first and last experience with that. And, you know, where a man actually physically put his hands on me. I mean, there's been other incidences where they may have been projectile thrown and things like that, but not physically put a hand on me to cause me harm with intent like he did, not in that particular scenario. So I'm not sure. I'd like to hear what other people would have to say about the subject. Because it's an issue that seems to be getting out of hand. And it's just something that we have another caller coming on board. Hold on. Hello, caller. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, caller.
Hey.
Hey.
Can you hear me? I'm trying to turn the volume down on my computer. I know you might hear some feedback, but I'm trying to turn this down, and it's not working for me right now.
Whoa. You got it?
No, I don't. I'm going to have to exit out of it. Okay. I exited out. I'm okay.
Okay. Now. Okay. All right. So I know that you want to chime in on our issue. When is it okay for a woman to be hit? So
yes, of course we had you know, conversations this week, and you know, not even just this week, but stemming a little further back about when, you know, I think it's okay for a man to hit a woman. And me personally, I take it as, you know, human beings are just that, they're human. It has no, in my opinion, it has nothing to do with gender. Because, you know, males are human just like we are. Males should not hit women. I don't believe that. I don't condone it. But I do believe that if a woman, you know, is big and bad enough to put her hands on a man, then she should be, you know, willing to accept the consequences and repercussions that come along with it. That's just my opinion. That goes for me. If I were to put my hands on, you know, a man, or anything, you know, like that. If it was a woman, I would expect the same thing. So why shouldn't I expect to be hit by a man? I mean, you know, they're human just like we are as females.
You know, and that's odd that you brought that up, because during this course of the week, when I put the show out there, I was just telling Rebecca that it was so many women that were actually saying exactly what you're saying, that sometimes we as females take it to a whole nother level, and then it's okay for us to push, and try to beat the man down and dare him to touch us, because the minute that he does, then we're going to pick up the phone and call 911, and then he's going to get carted away. So, you know, it's and I'm sure that, you know, there are some people out there that will probably say, well, wow, you know, this is something new where women are not even taking up for ourselves anymore. But again, we have to think about the fact that this is someone who is the aggressor or the initiator of the violence. And I believe, how does it go? Violence begets violence, or something like that. So, gentlemen, if you're out there listening tonight, give us a call, 646-478-4726. We really would like to have your opinion on this situation. And if you've been in this type of situation, for male or female, then give us a call, because we'd like to know what you think. And I have another question. I don't know if you may know someone who has been through it or someone who's going through it, but suppose it's a parent who likes to slap the daughter around, whether it be the father beating her up or the mother. I don't know if you all can relate to it or if you know someone who has been through that. But in that particular situation, I think that I'm assuming that you all would agree that that teaches the child in some incidences. Of course, nothing is etched in stone where it will happen that way, but it teaches them to grow up to continue that vicious cycle. And then the female may grow up to become the aggressor because it was done to her, and then she would need to have someone to, again, do that too. So what's your take on the scenario of maybe a parent teaching it? We're not just talking about the simple spanking. That's an issue within itself. We're talking about when it's not just a spanking for a reprimand, but when it's because the parent is the dominant individual, and for whatever's going on in their life, they take it out on the child.
Well, I'm sure you probably remember when I used to speak with you about what I went through with my mother, because of the issues that she went through with my father, or things that, you know, of course she's battling alcoholism, and things that may not be going right in her life. When I was younger, she would, you know, often take them out on me, and she would, you know, when my father was around, it was more, so it was something that she was mindful of. She knew not to hit me in front of my father. You know, she would slap me across my face if he wasn't around. But if he was there, she was mindful of that. She knew that there would be an argument because he said, you know, there's no reason you should slap her in the mouth like that. There's no, you know, I wasn't doing anything that called for me being smacked in the mouth like that. But when he wasn't there for a period, he did not live with us, and she used that period of time where he wasn't around to take her aggression out on me. So the smallest little thing I did, I got yelled at and I got slapped. And, you know, it wasn't just a simple slap. It was, you know, across the lips or, you know, things like that. I've had times where I had the busted lip. My tongue would bleed. You know, she would hit me that kind of hard. And, you know, I didn't get, even if I did something that called for me being reprimanded, I would get beat with a belt. And to this day, you know, I refuse to beat my children with a belt because I don't believe that, you know, I don't know what they, back in the day they did the switch thing, but I don't believe in that. You know, if that's what it works for them, that's fine. But for me, I don't believe in beating a child with a belt. And, I mean, some people may think I'm wrong for that, but, you know, that for me, that was very damaging to who I am. I still remember that now. And it's just something that will always be with me because I felt like I got beat for, you know, all her frustration was taken out on me.
Right. And that opens up the can for a whole other issue. When you're in a setting or a broken home setting where you have the single parent and the woman does not have that male companion in her life, do you believe that, and then if she's watching you grow or get the man's or your father's attention or men's attention when they're around more so than she is, do you think that sometimes that also plays into it where it becomes a thing of two females and one is getting older and doesn't have anyone in her life, or does it become something of jealousy, or what made you think that, you know, she would do it? And, of course, it was obviously, you know, calculated because she would know not to do it in the presence of the main witness, so to speak. So do you think that she did it because out of, being lonely and not having that companion? Or, I don't know, you know, you've experienced it. What, looking back on it now, what do you think was the actual cause of her, you know, doing that to you, being as though she's your mom? And, you know, do you ever think, well, why did you do that to me?
Well, there's been times when I've asked her, you know, why did you do this, and why did you, you know, talk to me this way or whatever, and she's never really given me a good answer. She would say, you know, I would be saying something that I shouldn't be saying or something like that. And you know, I went through a period with my mouth. I was a female, and I was, you know, typical. I had the mouth, and, you know, we would argue a lot. But I think it was more so that she was lonely, as you said, and she was longing for that attention that she wanted from him, and she was not getting it. Even when he was around, the attention was going to me, and, you know, she wasn't getting what she wanted out of the deal, which was a stable relationship. You know, there was infidelity going on that I was told about. And, you know, it just, she never felt like she was the only one getting the attention. And for her, I think she had a lot of things that were frustrating. Not only that relationship, but whatever is the cause of her alcoholism was also playing into it. And it just happened to be that, you know, I was the whipping post because I was the only one that was around.
And for you, you know, so many people take that and make it a negative, but you turned it around and you did something else to go into a different direction, so to speak. You didn't continue that vicious cycle. Another question now, of course, this is just hypothetical, of course, but do you think that it would have been harder on you had you had girls opposed to boys?
That's a good question. A lot of times, I don't know if I would have ever, you know, the whole whipping thing like she did, I don't think I would have ever went to that extent, but having a girl is a lot harder than having a boy. You go through the phases, you go through the talking back, and a lot of times females in general, when they're in the same space, they're going to disagree on a lot of things. So I can't really say, but I know that I think it would have been a little bit harder than it is with boys. I do believe that. But would I have been different? I don't know.
That's been, you know, a question that if someone's gone through that, do you think that had you had daughters, again, for our caller, 646-478-4726, call in and give us your opinion on this topic. Again, some of the scenarios that we have gone through are if the woman is the aggressor and she keeps pushing and pushing and pushing, is it ever okay for the male to retaliate, and whether it be out of self-protection or whether it be out of a simple retaliation? And the same goes for, say, it's the same sex. Is it any different if it's a woman who's pushing on another woman to when she pushes her too far? Is that more acceptable in this society? Because one of the things that I noticed the entire week when I brought the topic up to people was the first thing out of their mouth was, a man should never hit a woman. A man. And I said, okay, well, suppose it's a parent hitting on the child unnecessarily, not out of reprimand, not because they did something wrong and they're giving them what society considers a normal spanking or something, but we're talking about closed fists, you know, bursting the lips, putting scars on you. You know, if you've been through it, whether it be a former husband, lover, friend, whomever, are there times when it's justifiable in your book? And if you've been through it, give us a call, 646-478-4726, to let us know what your experience was, whether you were the aggressor or whether you were the one who someone had put their hands on you. Let us know. Rebecca, are you still there?
Oh, I'm here.
Because we'd like to get your opinion on different scenarios about this, because me being someone who's studying law, you know, it's amazing the different stories that we may come across in the courtroom, and different scenarios, and not everyone, you know, wins their case. And the different, oh, I don't know how to say it, the different excuses. Some of them are more outlandish and crazy than others. Ah, we have another caller coming in. Give me a second here. Hello,
Hello
caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, it's me.
Hey.
Yeah, I figured I'd call in and get my, you know, just join the conversation.
Oh, okay. You're perfectly welcome. We have our male caller. Go ahead. Give us your opinion on that.
It's basically that I don't feel as though it's ever a time when it's justifiable when that a man should be able to, when a man hits a woman. The conversation that I had the other day was what changed in that back in the day when men would come home and they would beat their woman, even if it was a simple slap, that it was accepted more than it is now. What was that? What was the thing that changed? And that's basically what I was talking about the other day. I just wanted to see if I could get some more input on that.
Well, the women's movement changed a lot. When women started to become a member of the workforce during the wars, and the women's movement started for us to have the right to vote, and we were demanding that we were treated more like equals as opposed to us. And speaking of that, someone pointed out the other day, well, I think it was earlier today, and I was talking to someone that they said, it's okay to hit a woman when they start demanding to be treated equal to a man. And I was like, okay. You know, that in itself was an interesting, again, another interesting response, because so many women here are determined to be treated like a man. So many women, I don't want a man to open up a door for me. I don't want a man to do this. I can do it myself. I can do it myself. And then some people are saying, well, you know what? If you want to, you know, do everything like a man, then you should be able to take your beating like a man. That's another scenario within itself. If anybody wants to chime in on whether you think that we as women have demanded so much, have we taken the equal treatment to another level? I'm not saying should we give up any of our equal rights to fair labor and you know, things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying that on a personal level, have we, some of us, decided that, you know, if you want to be, you know, if you don't want a man to be a gentleman, let's put it that way, have we kind of opened up the door for this ourselves, so to speak? Does that make sense to everyone? Because I'm trying to, you know, understand, you know, how much of it is something that some of us may have bought on ourselves, in other words.
Yeah, that makes sense. I see where you're coming from.
You know, I just don't, Rebecca?
This makes me think of something that, I should say that I'm very firmly against domestic violence, you know, really, you know, beating your children, anything out of anger with touching somebody always in the end equates to hurt. So I have heard people made comments saying that some women stay in those kind of situations where they get hit because they like it. And what I gather from that scenario is that women who are exposed to that kind of a toxic environment, usually that's their comfortability level. Like, that's what makes them comfortable, because that's something they probably experienced. They probably watched their mom get hit, and then their mom in turn hit them, or, you know, it could have been the other way around. But still, I think women stick around in those kind of scenarios because it's something that they're... Another caller.
Oh, we got another caller coming on board. Hold on a moment. Let's see. Good evening, caller. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Are you talking
Hello?
To me?
Uh-huh.
Hello.
Oh. Okay. I'm listening to this and kind of cringing.
Yeah.
There is no circumstance other than self-defense where it is all right for one person to beat up another person, whether the person being attacked is male or female doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Given that, how could it be that it's okay because women ask to be treated like men? Being asked to be treated as an equal does not mean being asked to be beaten up.
Yep. And, you know, I think that was the interesting part about doing this show this week is that I got so many interesting comments back to let us know, you know, how people really view this situation. And the sad part is that so many people did use the fact that women asked for equal rights, so that equated to equal fights, you know. And
But it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't.
There's
it
a
does
fallacy
not.
In that argument. There no set of circumstances that make it okay to abuse somebody.
Right. And, you know, but let's take it a step further. With our legal system, we all know, I mean, here in the Maryland area, there was a gentleman, a judge, particularly maybe 2 or 3 years ago, some of you may remember this, when there was a domestic violence case, and he told the woman, you know, something to the effect that she deserved it, blah, blah, blah. She let the man go, and later on that day, he went to her job, doused her with gasoline, and set her on fire. I don't know if anyone remembers that incident, but there are judges out there who are just not now. For me, what I've witnessed and seen, you know, and saw for myself was that you know, a lot of male judges are not as sympathetic to the situation many times. Not all, but some where, for instance, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. Say, for instance, if a darker-complected female went into court and a male judge would say, well, where are your bruises? And it's like, you know, darker-complected people don't necessarily bruise, or they don't show up the same way that they would if you were a lighter-complected person.
Right.
You know, so for a judge to say, well, I don't see any bruises, so obviously nothing happened. And then the woman walks outside, and the man is waiting for her with a knife and kills her right on the courtroom steps. You know, I think that at this point, I do know that in this area, I can't speak. Maybe the rest of you that are in different states can chime in on this. I know here there was an advocacy group who had attorneys sitting in courtrooms to see how judges were responding to domestic violence cases. And, you know, they had to shed light to not everyone bruises and brains. You know, not everyone, you know, you're not going to see a bruise right away on someone who may have thicker skin or, how you said, or darker hue or whatever. And they may never bruise, but that doesn't mean that something didn't happen. And there, you know, again, there's been so many cases here where judges usually, matter of fact, all of them that made the news anyway, have been male judges who are, for whatever reason, they're not very sympathetic, or they're just not taking the fact that these women are in danger serious. You know, and I think that that's a problem within itself. And again, another problem is that when it's within the household, when it's a parent that's abusive, the caller said that her mother, when her father wasn't around, you know, she would beat her up in the absence of the father. But when he was around, it was a different scenario. So, you know, that in itself is another issue that so many people don't take serious. And then it breeds, what is it called, you know, when people are, well, especially children, are dependent on their parents. So they don't necessarily know where to go. What is the syndrome called when they're just, you know...
Housing syndrome?
What's it called?
Munchausen syndrome?
Is that it?
When the mother beats the child uncontrollably, or they hit people uncontrollably, I believe?
Well, that one, and when they're afraid to leave, or they've been so conditioned where they won't leave, even if they left the front door wide open, they won't leave.
Well, children are oftentimes by nature, or always by nature, loyal to their parents. So parents can do a whole lot of awfully damaging things to a child, and that child is still going to want to be with those parents. That's a generalized statement, but that oftentimes happens with children.
And they have a fear of the unknown even more than adults do. Even adults will have the same problem getting out of a dangerous situation.
Exactly.
What was I about to say? How am I going to say this? I lost my train of thought here, but someone had said earlier in the week that women stay because they, quote-unquote, like it.
No.
I found that...
They may be accustomed to it. It feels normal. But to say they like it is not accurate.
And I would say...
something of an expert, a layman's expert, if you will, in the subject of abuse. I counsel people, I help them heal from abuse. And there is no set of circumstances where abuse is okay, or when to say that the person asked for it, that's not correct.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think that some women, in my opinion, stay in the relationships because they have become so dependent and on their partner, and the partner has enabled them to the point where, you know, they own the car, they pay the rent or the mortgage, they buy the food, they do everything, and these women, you know, their excuse is they have no place else to go.
What about the women that say that if he doesn't beat me, he doesn't love me? What is the thinking behind that?
Those women generally have been abused in their childhood, and to them the abuse is normal. That doesn't make it right, but that's how it's perceived.
Okay.
The men who abuse women, not 100% of the time, because there certainly are different reasons, but most of the time, I think it's safe to say, the men are misogynists, men who hate women, and that also is learned behavior. But the point is, they seek control, and part of that control is a constant dose of how worthless the woman is, how she couldn't possibly survive without him, and on and on. And over time, like any brainwashing technique, the woman comes to believe it. So she doesn't leave because she thinks she can't. She doesn't realize that she can, she just needs help.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh.
You know, and that's another thing. I think that so many people, no matter what topic we speak on here, it comes back to the same thing that, you know, in some socioeconomic groups or particular ethnic groups, speaking about these types of things is taboo. And another thing is so many people may witness it or know that it's going on, but they choose to turn the other way and stick their head in the sand. You know, how do you get through? If there is a way, or is it just the fact that that person has to wake up for themselves and try to get out of it, or, you know, are there, how many more ways are there where we can put more awareness out there so that people can stop turning the other way, because until it affects them, they act like they don't see what's going on. You know, and no matter what, you know, what state you're in, if a child gets, if they see that, like the woman here who had the children, she had killed them and was saving their bodies in her freezer so she could keep getting their social service checks and things. Everyone's quick to get on the camera in front of the news and say, well, I knew something was wrong and I did this and that. But, you know, what is the problem? Does anyone want to give an idea? Say if it were you, would you get involved if you saw it going on? Or would you just turn the other way quickly and walk in your house and close your doors and make pretend like you didn't see it?
I could not call myself a human being, let alone a Christian, if I were to turn my back on something like that.
You know, that's my thing. You know, I would report it, do something. They did a show, I think it was one of the talk shows, the morning talk shows that comes on, and there's this show that comes on where they set up all these scenarios. I think it's called What Would You Do or something. And they had one of those mechanical babies in a car, and the car was closed and no one was around.
I saw that.
And the majority of the people walked right past the car. Some
no
people
way.
Said, well, I didn't want to try to touch the baby and then the police come and arrest me. That was some of the excuses. Others were, well, I just didn't know if it was a real baby or if it was a doll baby. Okay, well, until you try it to tap the window to wake the baby up or to take something and break the window and see, how would you know? And if it is a real baby, then you just may have contributed towards its demise. So it's amazing how many people would turn the other way and not do anything. And the show was absolute. Person after person after person walked by, looked in. Eventually, maybe three people stopped and got on their phones and called for help. And nobody actually broke the window to let the heat out of the car or anything, but they called for help. So, you know, I don't know whether, you know, that was okay, but was it right? No, because the baby's still cooking in the car. You know, so it's amazing that people do not want to get involved.
Yeah, it can be pretty scary.
And, Rebecca, I know for you, you all have foster kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
The parents. And I'm sure that some of the, well, I don't know, I know that when I dealt with foster kids, when I first started my foundation, a lot of those children came from homes where there was a lot of abuse, whether it was fueled by drug use or whatever, but a lot of them showed signs of that. Even, you know, after they were taken from that environment, do you find that some of that happens?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been, my mother has been a foster mother for over 20 years now, and there's been a lot of children that have been a product of physical abuse, violent abuse. They're watching their mothers get beat regularly, getting beat themselves, babies that had been shaken, babies that had been shaken to cause retardation, you know, just...
Wow.
A vast array of things, and a lot of the children, they were toddlers. They remembered, and they often would have behavioral issues, and they would lash out because that's what they were taught. That's the response that they got, so it was more comfortable, and it was a more reasonable thing for those children to behave like that, to be so fierce and to be angry because their parents or their scenario was toxic again. And it does corrupt, I believe, some social skills that carry on into their younger adult life, and hopefully they see a problem and they get it fixed. I strongly believe in counseling and therapy, and it can do a lot of amazing things. And actually, I'd like to share this today. I was on Facebook, and there was one special little girl that was my foster sister for 3 years, and this was when I was 8 and a half, and she left when I was around 12, and she was just one of my favorite little girls, and her brother was there, and I just ran into her, and I'm going to go see her after the show. So I'm very, very excited. I haven't seen her in about 20 years. So, well, not 20, 18 years. So, yeah, a lot of kids basically do come from very violent scenarios. And also, it's been my experience that children who are taken away and brought to foster care, the circumstances have to be really, really, really telling, because the state just can't yank anybody's children away. Children are often put through hell and back before they're actually even rescued, and that's if they're rescued. Then if they go to a decent foster home where they're taken care of and, you know, more than that, loved, because a lot of them go into care and they have no sense of love because nobody's ever cared for them. Oftentimes it's, you know, the parent cares more for the drug addiction, or the woman is so abused she can't see to take care of her children. There's just so many different scenarios that play into child abuse, and it's really unfortunate. So, yeah, it's something that I've seen many a times.
With you speaking on that, that was one thing that I mentioned when I was having the conversation this week. It was my question was more so, why don't people have any sympathy for those who are abused and in turn become abusers? Because for me, I'm not going to say all, but a lot of people who become abusers, whether they're male or female, because believe it or not, most of the time people talk about the male abusers, but people don't address the female abusers. And a lot of times those people come from abusive situations themselves, and nobody knows the damage that it does to that child when they have to see their parent or their step-parent be, you know, be abused, or their brother or sister or, you know, whomever it is. And nobody talks about that, and nobody seems to have sympathy on that, you know, situation. Just there's a lot of people who are going through that, and nobody cares. It's just like, you know, it's, for example, when you all were talking about Chris Brown and Rihanna, he had said before that he would never hit a woman. And he also said that he grew up in a abusive home, which was the reason that he would never hit a woman. But then the situation arose where he wound up, you know, not only hitting her, but beating her the way he did. But nobody talks about the fact that he came from a very troubled background, and, you know, there was a reason to why he did it. Maybe he honestly thought that he would never hit a woman because he saw what his mother went through. But then to be, you know, pushed to the point where they said that he had been, you know, he had been hit, he had been bitten by her, you know, you don't know what instinctively he may have just, you know, hit her and then, you know, kind of sort of lost control and just continued to beat her the way he did, and, you know, say the things that he said, like he was going to kill her and all that. But nobody takes into consideration the fact that he came from a troubled background, and she may have, you know, not just her, but any female may push a male to that point where he just loses it.
Self-defense is always acceptable.
What was that?
Self-defense is always acceptable. So if she was abusive to him, then it's totally okay to fight back.
Well, that was my thing. When I was saying earlier, I was saying if a woman, you know, hits a man, she should be prepared to be hit back, because instinctively he may not even think before he hits her. Now, whether he'll beat to the point where Chris Brown did or whatever, like some men do, some people beat and then they eventually kill, you know. Whether that's going to happen, you don't know, but the woman should be held just as responsible for hitting the man.
Yeah.
And no, it's been said that she hit him, but nobody ever talks about her hitting him. It's always that he beat her. That's all we ever hear, he beat her. She's excused for her behavior.
You know, and that is a good point, but let me backtrack a bit. When we were talking about the children in the system, and I think, Rebecca, you had said that it has to be a really, really bad, almost total near-death, worst-case scenario before the authorities will step in and do what needs to be done. So my question is, do you think that our system is way too lax, and they wait too long before they intervene.
Absolutely. My parents, before I was taken away, there were several allegations made. And, you know, I was the last of six children to be taken away. So, you know, 8.5 years passed, you know, into my life, I still lived with my biological parents. So, yeah, I hold them incredibly accountable for me being unsafe for those 8.5 years, because they already had terminated the rights and adopted out four other children. And also then I had problems with my father later on in life. He was harassing me and stalking me and menacing me, and I actually, I went to court and I lied and I said that he had hit me, because I found out that's the only way you could get a restraining order. Somebody has to hit you first before you can get that order. And I think that's ridiculous. Why do I have to be hit first? I didn't trust that he wouldn't come hit me. His job as a pedophile, he worked for the school district and was a custodian, so he had constant access to children. Then, after all, you know, he lost all of his children, the company or the school district let him go, and then he became a security card private rent-a-cop, and he drove this cop car that looked so very real. So I think that he's always in a position to look for victims. And, you know, again, getting back to the system, oftentimes people say that there's many, many, many men that serve time, you know, when they shouldn't have for rape. Well, my father didn't go to jail, and my father didn't go to jail because I was being that loyal 9-year-old. I didn't want to tell on my father, and because of my social or my psychological condition at the time, being that loyal to my father and being so traumatized, I couldn't mutter the words. He didn't have to go to jail. So, you know, you hear about all these victims. You know, I think we talked about numbers a couple weeks ago. I believe it's 2 in every 7 that boys have been sexually abused by the time they're 18.
There's high numbers. Of boys and 20-something percent, almost 30% of girls by age 18.
And what was the first number?
It's about 17 to 18% of boys, according to FBI statistics.
Right, and those are the cases that go reported. I mean, how many don't get reported? So, it's so sad to me that there's so many perpetrators out there, and I mean there must be. There's so many victims out there, and you know the jail systems aren't flooded with sex offenders. I mean, sure there are some, but I just think the crime goes unpaid for oftentimes, and people are in abusive situations that they can't get out of because sometimes the system lets people down.
Yeah, you know, and for me, each week, as you all know, well, Rebecca, you know, I send out the stats for the show and things like that, and so many people will send an email or give a call or give their opinion, because I said, well, why didn't you come on and say what you had? I don't want anybody to hear. Somebody may hear that recognizes my voice, or, you know,
people don't get involved. Our society is so litigious now. They're afraid,
you know, and that again leads us to the point that what do we do about it? I mean, for me, these people are calling and they're emailing, and Rebecca, you've seen where I've forwarded some emails so that you guys can try to talk to some of these people and see what's going on in their life. I mean, I have people that are contacting me saying, I just need someone to listen to me. You know, and it's a lot of burden on me because they're all contacting me, and when I'm going through my own, you know, set of issues, sometimes it gets overwhelming even for me. I feel as though, you know, I'm glad that this show is helping people have that place where they can come and find out that they're not alone. And for so many of them, you know, when I'm listening, it means so much to them that first and foremost, they actually got through to me, or they'll get a response back from Rebecca, or even if a caller, we have a caller in here who works with, you know, is an advocate for children and works in the system. If I said, you know, well, that caller may give you a call just to listen, they are more amazed that they're talking to a real person, and that person was the person who did the talk show, who was actually there. And they think, oh, my gosh, you're real. This isn't a secretary or you know, one of these voice bots or anything. And I say, yeah, I'm a real person, and I'm going to listen. And if I can guide you in, you know, where to get help, of course, I will do that. And it means so much to so many people to just have someone who is showing them that empathy. And so many people don't even have empathy. You know, they just don't care. There is no kind voice. There is no listening ear. People hear people talk every day, but they're just hearing them say words. They're not actually listening and getting into what they're trying to say, because a lot of times people say things, and you have to read the hidden messages behind what it is. Children, I guess our advocate could say, you know, children have a way of telling their story, whether it be through their drawings or if they write a story. You can always tell when something's not right because children's minds have a way of manifesting it and bringing it to light. And it's up to us to get out of our heads out of the sand so that we can understand it. To the male caller, of course, question for you. I don't know if you've known people that have been in that type of situation, but I was just curious when you said, what's the rationale behind people who want to stay in a relationship? Because if the man doesn't hit the woman, then obviously he doesn't love her. Have you actually, do you know people that are going through that right now? Or have you just heard the stories about it? You know, it was interesting that you brought that topic up, is I guess what I'm getting at.
No, I haven't personally heard of anybody, but I have, well, I don't personally know anybody, but I've heard it most of the time on radio in a, you know, talk show type situation like this, and I've always wondered what was the rationale behind that because of what was going on. You know, somebody's beating you, and you believe that if they don't love you, or they don't love you, if they don't beat you, it just seemed kind of, it seemed crazy to me, but at the same time, I haven't been in that situation, so I just didn't understand the rationale behind it.
It is crazy, but if you're raised your entire life being told by the people who are supposed to love and take care of you, your parents, that you're worthless, that you're no good, that they've got to beat you for your own good, you know, when I beat you, it means I love you. If you grow up with that constant brainwashing, many people will accept that.
I agree with that. It becomes something that's normal. And me studying psychology, the further along I go, the more those kind of things make sense to me. It is, you know, still crazy for us, you know, on the outside looking in. But for those who are actually going through it, if this is what they've been conditioned to know, that, okay, well, somebody's telling me that no man will ever want me, or nobody will ever love me, or I'm the only person who loves you, and nobody will take care of you like I do. You know, if that's all you hear, after a while, you really start to believe that stuff, just like if you tell lies. After you tell lies for so long, you'll actually start to believe your own lies. So that's, the brain is a really powerful thing, because once you it's easy to brainwash someone who's weak, and some people are weaker than others. So for those women out there, or even, you know, the men who happen to be victims of domestic violence, you become this person that feels like whatever I'm told, it must be the truth, and it feels like you're just as worthless as they say you are. And then a lot of times people love unconditionally. I know I may be wrong in this statement, but for me it seems like a lot more women love unconditionally than men. A lot of men love with conditions. And when a woman loves somebody, it's very hard for her to leave. So if she's in a situation with someone and she feels like she loves and she feels like she can't live without this person, she will continue to stay in a situation that's detrimental to her health or her well-being because she loves that person.
Yep.
And, you know, it's odd that you all would bring that up because I'm kind of like going to plug a future show that we have coming on, especially to our male caller. In about another 4 weeks or so, we'll have a author, Susanna Barlow, coming on. She wrote a book, What Peace There May Be. And Susanna is actually the 23rd of 46 children. She was born into and raised in a religious sect, I believe, in Utah. So she's going to come on and give more of an insight on what happens when, you know, it's all that she knew. She was born into this, and she lived this life for a long time. And she's going to really give some insight on how she came out of when her day of awakening was and how she decided to leave and move on with her life, and when she discovered that there was a world outside of the compound or outside of the barriers that this group had set up around her. And, you know, a lot of people may take this as a joke and things like that, but some of these people are actually, it's all that they know. And when you're born into it, you don't know what's on the outside because you haven't been there. So she'll be coming on the 24th of April. So I think that that's going to be a very interesting show that can dig deeper into what it's like to be in that type of a setting. And there's not going to be too much that she won't be able to touch on to give more of an insight of what it's like when it's all that you know. So when someone says, you know, to beat someone means that they love them, you know, in the case where it's all that they know, you know, maybe it'll be, I love the fact that this show is reaching so many people, and although they're afraid to call in or they don't want to sit in a chat room because they feel as though someone might, you know, trace their IP address and know, well, that's my neighbor's computer, and they're online talking about their life and blah, 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 you know. But, again, some people are just that paranoid where they're afraid to venture out and put one foot in front of the other. And, again, you have so many people whose heads are in the sand, and you have our system who won't step in. What was the name of the young lady? What was it, Gugard or something, where they found her, what, last year sometimes? And, you know, the system had gone to these people's homes several times, and they never, you know, went through the home to see that there were tents and things set up where they had her, and, you know, they were raping her and all of this for all those years. And, you know, people were, they would come over the house, they would have their little cookouts and friends over, and nobody put two and two together to know that they had that girl all those years. You know, it's just amazing how have we gone to the point where I believe someone had asked earlier how, you know, what changed from the days of old and now, when the women's movement started and things like that, to give us our equal rights and things of that nature. But, you know, I don't know where, what's happening now, so to speak. Now it's like, to a degree, it's starting to revert backwards, and no one wants to do their job anymore. No one wants to address the issues. You know, can anyone, is it me? Am I seeing this wrong? Or is it that we as a people and our system seems to be failing us, you know, left and right, and we as a people have become more of a, it's all about me personally, and as long as me and mine are okay, I don't care about anything outside of that until it comes knocking at my door. Does anyone think that we're going in that type of a direction, or is it just me with a warped sense of, you know, perception right about now?
I think a lot of people don't want to a lot of people want to stay clear of situations that have nothing to do with them. I hear a lot of people, you know, speaking that way where they'll say, you know, that's their problem or, you know, it's none of my business. So they'll see something going on in their neighborhood or they'll see something going on, you know, with someone and they'll just, they'd rather just go in the house and act like it's not going on because for them, you know, a lot of people don't want to, they don't want to tell. And they don't want to be, they don't, some people, if they feel like they're scared enough, depending on what the situation is, they don't want, you know, to be a target themselves. So a lot of people just choose to just stay away from it altogether.
Until it happens to them.
Exactly.
And then they would want, you know, I had someone a few years ago when I was working at a specific job. He said, I saw what happened, but I refused to be a witness. And I said, okay. And then a few months later, almost the same thing happened to him. And the first thing out of his mouth to me was, well, you saw it. Can it be a witness? I said, you know, I'm going to tell you what you told me. I saw it happen, but I'm not going to be a witness. But you saw it. I said, well, you saw what happened, you know, months ago. And your exact words were, you would not be a witness. So sometimes what goes around comes around. And, you know, I don't know what we could do other than what we're doing right now, which to me is a start because, as I said, come tomorrow morning, I'll be getting responses about this show, and people will be coming forward to tell me their stories. It is very, you know, very, very disturbing. Actually, some of the things that that I hear. And when, again, when I decided to do this venture, I knew that there was a lot of hurt that needed healing and people that have come through the rough road that would be willing to share their stories and give some insight. But, oh, my goodness, I had no idea the numbers, the sheer numbers alone are astronomical. And
well, if you figure that close to a third of women are sexually abused by the time they're 18, and certainly less than 20%, but still a sizable number of men, the same thing, and that is only sexual abuse, and that is only by the age of 18. When you count all the different forms of abuse and talk about a lifetime rather than a limited span, the numbers are unbelievably staggering. It's almost 60% of women are abused one way or another in their lifetime.
And that in itself, you know, and, you know, and it's sad to say because I think each and every one of us can probably fit into that statistic, you know. And, you know, and I chuckled at that because, you know, I had to just to keep from, you know, almost being in tears because it's like, wow, you know, to know someone who could actually say and it be the truth, nope, nothing's ever happened to me, nope, you're an anomaly in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, and if it hasn't happened thus far, does not mean that it won't by the, you know, the time you reach the end of your life cycle. You know, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but the realization is that I probably know more women who have experienced this than who have not.
I'm surprised oftentimes, actually, when I meet women who haven't been, I mean, really mostly sexually assaulted, really. I think I've maybe met just a few in my life, really. I mean, if the topic comes up, that have not been
admitted.
You know, I've known some women who don't remember it, you know, don't remember certain chunks of their life that have exhibited, you know, like the classic behavior of, you know, sexually abused girls. So then it makes you wonder, like, who was that? And obviously they got away with it because you never told on them. You know, oftentimes it goes, you know, oftentimes parents don't want to put their kids through the justice system, so they opt not to press charges. So
I know that actually happened with me when I was, I can't remember what age, I was very young. I may have been around 5 or 6. I know I was in elementary school, and I was going to a daycare where she had foster children that were older than me. They were girls. And I was being sexually abused by these two girls. I would cry every day. And, you know, when I went home, well, when my mother got there to pick me up, she would actually talk to the babysitter, and the babysitter would say, well, you know, she showed off terrible. She cried, and she did her usual. And this was every day. So I would go home, and, you know, what hurts me more is that my mother, I always felt like my mother was supposed to protect me, and she did not. Because I would go home every day, and this went on for a span of a year until the lady just said, I will not keep her anymore. And my mother, you know, would take me home. She would close the doors and the windows. And I can remember just like it was yesterday, like she would close the doors and the windows, and I would get beat for, you know, crying and, you know, what my mother thought was acting up. And I never told my mother until I was about 12 or 13. I actually told my father first that I was being sexually abused by these two little girls on a daily basis. And, you know, it hurt me more because when I told her, her response to me was, well, you should have said something. And it wasn't even that she just said you should have said something. It was the way she said it. It was so nonchalant. And it was just like, you should have said something. And I'm like, but I didn't know what they were doing to me. At 5 and 6 years old, I didn't know what that was that they were doing to me. I know it was something that I had never felt before. I knew it was something that they should not have been doing, but I didn't know how to say that. And I was scared because I had to be around these children all day long. And her simple response to this day is, you know, you should have said something. And it hurt for me because my mother was the person, you know, her and my father, but my father, I've always had a good relationship with my father. And my mother just was like, I didn't feel like she protected me. She didn't try to see what was going on. She didn't do any investigating to find out why I was carrying on the way I did. She just, you know, she took me to counseling one time, and that was only because that was my father's suggestion, and I didn't say anything to the counselor. The whole time I sat there, I didn't open my mouth one time. I cried, and I didn't know what to say to the counselor either. To me, she was another stranger that I didn't trust, so I didn't say anything to her either. But for my mother to sit there and let this go on for a whole year and not even try to find out why her child was acting out every day was just the most hurtful situation I've ever had to deal with.
Do you think that, I guess looking back now that you're a grown woman and your wife and your mother yourself, do you see, I don't know how to say this, do you see that, she did it because she, too, was a broken woman with a lot of issues of her own, I guess. Not that that justifies it, because it doesn't. You know, as a parent, I think that you should be able to figure out when a small child is something's just not right. You just don't sit and cry for no particular reason. Even if you're spoiled rotten, at some point you stop crying. You know, and I don't know. I don't know. That's one of those situations where, you know, maybe, you know, in hindsight, how do you feel about it? Do you think, and it's not justifying what she did or how she handled it, but...
No, it doesn't justify it. It just helps you understand it.
Right, exactly. I mean, have you come to some type of an understanding as opposed to why she did what she did? Or is it still one of those gray areas for you or black areas?
Well, a couple of years ago when I went and spoke to a counselor, because I actually had to go to counseling to try to get some type of balance and stability in my own, you know, with my own psychological state, it wasn't like I was going crazy, but these were things that would never leave my mind. So when I reached out to go to counseling, you know, she was saying that there's nothing you could do. Most of the time we talked about her alcoholism, and she explained to me about how she may want to stop, but, you know, at this point, it's something that her body feels like it needs to survive. So I look at it as she was so consumed in her own issues and drowning herself in her own sorrows with the alcohol, and she was a functioning alcoholic. You would never know if you saw her that she was an alcoholic. If you know, when I look at it like that, I see it as she had so much going on with herself that she was not able to see past what was going on in my situation, because when she wasn't dealing with the frustration, you know, she would choose to turn to alcohol to deal with it. And I always felt like I was on the back burner. That was just my thing. I still feel that way, but at times, you know, I understand that I don't hold her as accountable as I did years ago. Before, it was just, like, a lot of anger towards her because of what she didn't do. Now, it's like, you know, I understand that she is the way she is, and I don't think that – I hope that she'll change, but I don't think she will. She's no more understanding of my situation than she was back then. But for me, I'm more accepting of that. You know, at this point, it's like – I don't expect anything from her at this point. I don't expect her to change. I don't expect her to apologize. I don't expect her to recognize or acknowledge the issues. I don't expect anything.
Wow.
It's a truth that you cannot help somebody that doesn't want to be helped.
Exactly.
And until and unless she gets to the point where she recognizes that she needs and she wants the help to get over her problem, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, and that was my thing. I was always I'm 25, so I'd say the first 22, 23 years of my life, I always thought I could change her. It was, you know, maybe if I beg enough, or maybe if I cry enough, or maybe if I do this, then she'll, you know, she'll change. I cut off communication with her a couple of times. That didn't work. You know, she loves her grandchildren. She loves me, but, you know, it's just that she's so controlled in her mind and so consumed by alcohol that she just can't give it up. She just can't do it. And I realized it took me 23 years to realize that no matter how much I beg and I cry, that I would be the only one, you know, I would be the only one crying for it. She was still going to continue to do what she wanted to do. And it was getting to the point where it was consuming me and affecting my health, so I had to step away and realize that she's 55 and 56 now, and she's not. If she wants to change, she'll do it on her own. There's nothing I can do or say to make her do that.
Exactly. I mean, again, for our listeners, if you want to call in, it's our number 646-478-4726. We have about 37 minutes remaining in our program. I did decide to expand it out to a two-hour program because I thought that this was an issue that we could really hit on a lot of different angles and try to talk it out. And it's good to hear that that's your way of walking through. And I know that it's a lifelong journey when it comes down to, I guess, a parent that, you know, you'll have your good days and you'll have some bad days when, I know for me, things that, you know, I remember from my childhood, sometimes they just all come together and I'll sit down and I'll work them out. So it's a lifelong healing process. It's a lifelong evolving process. I think that that's another issue. Not everyone handles it as well as you did, of course. This forum here, you know, it's amazing that just people sitting around talking, what we can discover about ourselves from listening to what someone else has gone through. So for me, you know, again, our listeners, we have guests in the chat room. If you'd like to call us or make a statement, you can even type it out here, and I can address it for you. On air if you like. That way no one will know that it's you and they won't hear your voice. If you have something to say, feel free to type it in the chat room and I'll be your voice for you. You know, and I hope that whether it be a male or a female, if you're in some type of a relationship, whether it be a family setting or whether it be, again, a partner, lover, or friend, and someone is assaulting you or putting their hands on you inappropriately, there are places that you could go. And if you feel the need to even email us, our email is contact@thewallfoundationinc.org. Again, If you're going through something, feel free to give us a call, 443-865-4211, and we will try to connect you with someone in your area who can help you. That is what Healing Through Hurt is about. We are here, and tonight I think that we did touch on a very controversial yet topic that does not need to be taboo. And it is good that we are talking through some of our hurt to let our listeners know that we've all been there, done that. And, you know, we really do, some of us more than others, you know, each one of us has our own set of hurt that we've dealt with. So we all have a story to tell, and you're not alone. I chose to work through my pains and sorrows through creating my nonprofit and this radio show. So that's my vice or my venue for release. And as we go down the line, I guess we can start with you, Rebecca, and then our guest callers, and or anybody can chime in, actually, just tell us how you deal with how you've been hurt or a specific subject, and then how you walked through it, just real, you know, briefly, because we have about 33 minutes, so anybody can just jump in and talk about a specific topic and what you do to help release that hurt or that stress.
This is Rebecca, and I'd like to say that I release a lot of my tension and iron up some of those wrinkles through creating art, whether I draw something, it's highlighted differently in my life. Like right now, honestly, my drawings have been dark, and a lot of it's so dark where I'm just smudging it to give it a little shadow. And as I come out of this, I'm realizing that that's what's helped me. You know, when I do something that I do because I don't feel that it was done adequately enough for me, when I see something that's going on that shouldn't be, I do call the police. I do say something. I do stop and say something to some people sometimes. I've been out in public and seen women hit their children and ask them what they were doing, you know. You know, people even put their kids, you know, I'm on patrol all the time. People who put their kids in the front seat of a car, it's like, hi, did you know that that's the number one cause for brain injury amongst children. Like, could you not put your kid in the front seat? I don't care how much that kid cries. Something else I want to touch on, we were talking earlier, Tara just shared her brave story about what, you know, what happened to you as a child at that daycare, and my heart fell really hard when you told me that you would go home and your mother would beat you after that, and what that must have taught you, like how to communicate with some of your emotions, like, you know, be quiet, essentially. And, you know, then it creates a sense of, you know, a child feeling worthless, like my mom can't even help me, like I'm not even safe. I'm going, she's taking me to this place every day, like, you know, how amazing is it that now you're a mother and, you know, a good wife and, you know, a great family person, and you would never let that happen to your child, you know. I just think that some parents, you know, whether they've been drinking or not, some parents are more receptive to those kinds of things going on. I think sometimes people are just oblivious and they can't recognize that a child's acting out and there could be danger on the other side.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that, because this is a clear shot sign to all of our listeners, too, that you do not have to continue that vicious cycle. At some point, some of us do come to that moment, whether it be a few seconds, a few minutes, a few days, a few hours, where we have that moment of clarity where we can put one foot in front of the other and make that choice to go down a different road. So I think we, at some point, many of us, maybe not all, but many of us have the choice to decide if we want to remain a victim or whether we want to rise above that and use that negativity to become a better person, and in the event that we bring children into the world, teach them the exact opposite of what we had to go through. So, you know, that's to be commended. And just to let people know that you can decide to go down a different road and use that negativity to become something positive. You know, so next person.
Well, for me, I can say that I have always been, you know, when I was younger, it was a thing where I had to be quiet. I was ashamed of everything. I was ashamed that my mother was an alcoholic. I was ashamed that I had been sexually abused. And I was more ashamed that I had been abused by females because I didn't know anybody else who had been abused by females. You know, for me, it was like when people hear sexual abuse, they automatically think the opposite sex. And for me, especially when it's children, but for me, it was two females at age 11 and 12. And I have, you know, changed from the person who was so in a shell and didn't want anybody to know anything about me to a person who felt like I like to talk about. I mean, it's not something I like to talk about, but if I can help somebody else who's going through the same thing or who has gone through the same thing, then it's worth talking about to me. And that's also why I've chosen to, you know, make a career in psychology once I graduate, because I like to help people and, you know, give any insight that I have or that I can give for them to, you know, be better. Even if it's something that I can't change about myself, if I can help the next person, then that's totally what it's about for me. And that makes me feel better. That makes me feel like that, you know, I feel like that's my purpose and my mission, you know, while I'm here on earth. And another way that I heal and I deal with my issues is I pray a lot. I pray every day, and whenever something is not right, that's what I turn to, because I feel like I grew up so long feeling like I didn't have a mother to turn to. So there has to be another being higher than us that has been watching over me for all these years. And that's who I turn to.
Wow. Yeah, that's another thing. If you believe, then sometimes we have nothing left but our faith and our belief. And if you don't, then look for some type of advice to give you some type of clarity or release or relief down the road. A male caller, if you want to share anything with us?
I know that if anything, if I'm ever down about a certain thing, I find that having some alone time really helps out. That way you can really clear your mind and get away from it. I've been told that doing things like being active or maybe taking a walk or, you know, hitting the gym, that helps too. Anything that can give you enough time to really process the situation and understand what's going on. And it's just certain situations in life that at first, if you hear about it or you know, you might think that it's a lot worse than it is. I'm not talking about the abuse, but in general, if you could, you know, have time to really sit back and process things, then, you know, a lot of times you'll figure out ways to overcome the issue or you'll find out that it's not as bad as you initially thought, and getting out and being active and doing things like that, they are ways that can help. I know it helps me, and it can maybe help other people when they just need to, you know, kind of like rebooting a computer, you know, something like that. And, you know, doing artwork is another way that could help too. That's a good idea. But I'm just throwing out some ways that I've done, things that I've done or things that other people could try to do.
Hello?
Hey.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is good. You know, these are simple things that you can do. It doesn't cost a lot of money to pick up a set of crayons and some paper or something and just jot down your feelings, or even start a diary or a memoir and write out your feelings. And, you know, from time to time when you're think that you're at your lowest point, maybe you can go back and look at some of your pictures. Like Rebecca said, you know, she knows that her pictures, once she's done, they're dark. and they're not, you know, they're showing that she's in that dark place right now. For you, artwork and things like that, or prayer, you know, that's a great thing as well. So all of that, you know, is a way for us to, you know, for our listeners to be able to do something where you don't have to go and have health insurance and pay thousands of dollars to someone that tells you a textbook answer, when these are things that you can do to just help to release what you're holding inside. And, you know, it doesn't have to be something public. It can be something that you keep private to yourself. So when you think that it's just that you're at your worst point, you can read or look back at your pictures and remember a time that was even worse. So that's good. And one more caller.
I never told you. My name is Deborah. Hi.
Hi, Deborah.
Somebody mentioned you can choose to not be a victim. When I was going through counseling after some 8 months of that, my counselor asked me one day, when was I going to stop being a victim? And I didn't understand. He said in a very accusatory tone of voice. And I said, no, wait a minute, you don't understand. I'm the victim here. When I see a steamroller coming down the street, I don't go out and lay down in front of it. And he said, no, but you don't get up out of its way either, do you? You know, it took me 2 weeks to figure that out. 2 weeks. Because I was one of those people who all my life had been told by my siblings and other people that basically that I was worthless. And I had spent the majority of my life being a professional victim. And I went through a lot of abuse, and, you know, but that's another story. But one thing I learned as an adult, and I know it's not very politically correct to talk about Christianity now, but I'll tell you, one thing I learned is that God loves all of us, even those of us who make mistakes, even those of us who make bad mistakes, he still loves us. And I learned that one of the reasons, if not the only reason, that I survived what I did go through is because he was there with me. I was never alone, even though I thought I was. And I know I never will be. So if something else were to come my way that would be equally horrendous, I know I could get through it because
right.
He's there with me.
Oh, my goodness. We have another caller coming on board. Hold on a moment. Let's see.
I did go through.
Hello?
Hello, caller. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I was kind of listening tonight, and, you know, I come from a family of 13, number 12.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you what. I mean, I seen abuse big time from the family I came from.
Wow.
You know? I mean, and she was talking about from the siblings and, you know, all that, you know, to where they're you know, verbally assaulting you. And, you know, I went through that. And I came from a Catholic family. South side of Chicago, you know.
Uh-huh.
Hello?
Yeah.
And you know, I had an uncle that was molesting three of my brothers. But
wow. This
came out of Boston, too, because my uncle, you know, I always say it was because he was an altar boy. Other people say it was because he was a Boy Scout. But we had that shit happening in my family, too.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Probably was.
So I mean,
he was
what?
Abused. I'm
hello?
Sorry to interrupt.
Uh-huh.
I apologize for interrupting. I was just saying it's probably because he was abused.
Right, and that's what I'm saying is, where do we go back and say, okay, where did all this abuse begin? Where is it coming from? Because I mean, my brothers finally made the stand. You know, they were like,
right.
Hey, man, you know. we're going to speak out about this. This happened to us. And then we had to go back into, like, what happened to Uncle Ed? You know, my father almost killed him.
Wow.
And what I'm saying, though, but all this shit that was happening, especially with an abuser that's family, within the family, you know?
Right.
So we realize, and look at all this shit happening with the Pope. We came from a Catholic upbringing. And what I'm saying is, look at what's happening, and where, I mean, we really, and what I really believe is the people really have to start looking at what their Christianity really stands for, and what their Catholicism really stands for, or what it all stands for. Who was this Jesus character? You know, because it has had such a big influence on so many of us, slave and free man.
Right.
You know, because I have to look back. Now, my relatives were never, my ancestors were never, they were never slave owners, but they surely came over to this country as Frenchmen because land was available, and they began to kill the natives and take over the land. They became abusers, but they still had this book of Christianity with them that said it was okay.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is, even with all this stuff going on right now in our world and in our lives and in our this paradigm shift. So many people are saying that now. Paradigm shift. You know, what I believe is we're trying to rediscover our matriarchal way. And that, I had a strong mother, you know, that made some strong sons. You know, she was a Christian lady all the way to the end. But still, she planted the seeds of, hey, you know, go out to the woods, you know. There's your church. Go out to the prairie. Go out to the stream. There is your church.
Yeah.
So rediscovering this and the abuse that we all went through, because it was very patriarchal, and we have to begin to understand each and every one of us that the patriarchal way that we have been living for the last 2,000 years. You know, especially out of Rome and Europe and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, you got the slavery and, you know, even the patriarchal. Where is this patriarchal thought coming from that is feeling like we're all on steroids with it?
Wow.
And how do we
yeah.
start bringing in the matriarchal way again? But my family was abused from the patriarchal institutions, and it seeped into my family, both as abuser and abused. My father's side, now, he always said he was French Indian from the Abenaki out in Vermont. But it wasn't talked about, and we didn't really talk about that side of us because the history was supposed to be annihilated, and that's how they made everybody feel about it. But anyway, you know, I'm a mutt. I'm a mutt no matter what. I'm in America. Who knows what the hell I am? And what I'm saying, though, is we have to start walking the matriarchal way. And my family was very abusive, just like you, and that's where I stand and what I think.
Right.
Hello?
And
I
thank you so much for calling in to share your story with us because, again, you know, you're a clear example of, you know, people. We're all over. They're males, they're females, and we all share that story of some type of hurt and abuse in one way or another, and we're everywhere. And, you know, it's good that you've gotten up and your brothers and your siblings, you know, you all figured out a way to have find your voice and to talk
because
about that.
Because we spoke about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
We spoke about it. We allowed it to be spoken.
Exactly.
And we speak about it still today, and we say this isn't going to happen.
Right.
Have children.
You can't become silent to things like that. You can become silent on what you want for dinner.
Right.
You know? But you can't become silent when people are being abused within your own community or within your own family.
Right.
Amen.
The question I pose to you, do you have any children? And if so, do you feel that cycle has stopped? Or between the 12, 13 siblings, how do you feel that your family speaks enough about it to not allow it to happen?
I have
anymore?
Four children. I have four
I'm
children.
I'm sorry?
I have four children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm divorced. 2 years now after 22 years of marriage.
Wow.
In which I still love her. I still cherish that lady. You know what I mean? I mean, I still cherish her, and I don't care what she could do anything to me. She could chop off my head tomorrow. I'd still cherish her. I don't know what it is. But that's how I feel about her. And I have four children. One was a door knocker at the age of 17. I never knew I had her.
Oh, okay.
They never told me.
Huh.
And that's when my marriage kind of started to spiral. There were already issues in the marriage. Don't get me wrong. There were already issues in the marriage. But that's when my wife just, she didn't know how to react. My ex-wife, she didn't know how to, she dealt with it in her own way. How's that?
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So I had to go along with however I had to go along with, and, you know, some other issues came up in the marriage, and, well, we didn't make it. But
yeah.
I have four.
Hello?
Hello? I think we lost our caller. Hello?
I'm still here.
Okay, wow. That was, we lost our caller, but, you know, again, yeah, caller, if you're out there, 646-478-4726. We have about 12 minutes left in our program for this evening. But again, this is a clear shot, example of the fact that it's all over. No one is immune from it. Again, as you can see, we're getting the male callers as well as female callers. So, you know, abuse and hurt shows no shame, and it has no particular group of people or sex or ethnic background. It attacks us all, and how we choose to address it and deal with it is a choice that we as an individual have to make. But like our last caller had said, we cannot just ignore what we see and we know is going on. In the same way that, you know, you can make an anonymous call, you can send an anonymous letter, or send several, or call a local news channel or someone that would pick it up and investigate, you know. Keep speaking until you find someone who will listen. And, again, he spoke about something in the religious sect going up Catholic, and the fact that, you know, that's a topic for another show. Just how much does your belief or your religion play on what you do and do not say? You know, if some religious leader says you will not do this and you will ignore this, then some people will take the word of that leader and do whatever they say. And, you know, as controversial a topic as that may be, you know, what part does religion play in the promotion of abuse and neglect and other issues? I'm sure that'll be another hot ticket item conversation, but the realization is that it does happen, and people are influenced by that. I believe we had one of our co-hosts, she had mentioned when we did a show about her experiences a few weeks ago, that she had had a relationship with a minister. And, of course, we're not knocking all ministers and people of any faith. We're not saying that. This is one particular incident that she thought that, oh, this is a man of God, so what he's doing must be right and I must conform, when, you know, he was just simply someone who wanted to get in her pants and get his way. And, you know, because as I said before, some got called, some got sent, and some just went. You know, not everyone that a minister was called by God or given that particular, you know, things like that. Our caller wrote to me in the chat room, and he said that his phone died. So we will definitely be emailing him. He gave me his email address. And caller, you're perfectly welcome to call back next week for our show as well. We are here every Saturday, of course, 11 o'clock Eastern Time, 9 o'clock Mountain Time, and 8 o'clock Pacific. So we're here every single Saturday. Different topic every week, but as you can see, we are growing. And I know the callers in the chat room listening. Oh, you're quite welcome. He said thanks for letting him vent, and you're welcome so much. And caller, if you could just tell me where you're from. What state are you from? Chicago, did you say? I'm writing to him in the chat room as well, but we have about 8 minutes left. But again, to our callers, this is a very real topic, and again, it's a clear shot example that we all experience some type of hate, of hurt, whether it be hate, whether it be violence, physical, mental, religious abuse, where people use religion as a way to control people. You know, we all have our stories, and we've all learned how to deal with them in different ways. Oh, our caller was in Madison, Wisconsin. So welcome, Madison, Wisconsin, to our show. He grew up in Chicago, but he lives in Madison, Wisconsin. So we can add Mr. Wisconsin to our list. His name is Peter.
Dear, thank you, dear, for that.
Thank you so much. And again, you're perfectly welcome to come back next week. We'd love to have you again and finish listening to your story. He says he was a firefighter in Cincinnati until the abuse got the best of him. So, you know, again, people, this is real people with real stories. And we welcome you to call us at any time next week, of course, 646-478-4726. If you would like to contact us anytime during the week, you can reach us at 443-865-4211 or 887-619-6884. Again, and if you'd like to send us an email, it's contact@thewallfoundationinc.org. This program is it falls under the umbrella of the Wall Foundation, Inc.org. Or the Wall Foundation Incorporated. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're looking to heal the hurt throughout the United States and eventually the world if we can. Again, my name is Maria Wall. I am your lead host, and I'm here with my co-host, Rebecca East. We have about 6 minutes left, callers. You all can just jump in and give us just talk on any topic that you want. Peter, again, thank you so much, and you're perfectly welcome to come back and visit us again next week, and we can even talk more about your situation. And thank you so much for giving us your story and your insight, because believe it or not, your story will help someone else that's sitting out there who did not have the courage to call in this week. So thank you again, and we look forward to talking with you again, and I will be sending you an email, and probably Becca and a few other folks who want to keep in touch. So okay. Callers, anything you want to add? We have 5 minutes left to our show.
Where do we find the blog?
The blog I will...
Or whatever it was you said.
The chat room?
Yes.
The chat room, you can get to that when you go to our site, blogtalkradio.com, and you register. You can actually come into the Wall Foundation, the chat room. That's what it's called, and it's sitting up right now. Debbie, right?
Deborah, yeah.
Deborah, yeah. If you give me a email, I will, or give me a call, 443-865-4211, I will give you all that information as well and get you to our other blog on Braveheart Woman. And that way you can still be in contact. And it was great having you as well. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. You know, we're growing by leaps and bounds, and this is a great thing. And I'm not just saying it because, I think he came back. Let's see. Let's see if we can get Peter back for a few moments. Hello, Peter, are you there?
Hey, yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, sorry. Yes. How are you about that?
That's okay. We have about 4 minutes left in our show, and I was just wrapping up. But again, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story, and you're perfectly welcome to come and visit us again next week.
Yeah,
we're here on Saturday.
I think this type of conversation still needs to be delved into, you know, because
yes.
We really have to start looking at ourselves and those that are closest to us.
Yes, most definitely.
You know, and how we are treating them, because that's what's most important. And
yes.
We really have to. So I would love to be a part of this conversation still, and no matter how long you have your show on, I give you my email tonight, so just go ahead and pop me a line and I'll be, I will make sure that I will make it to your show if I can, you know.
Oh, and you can always listen to the archive show. They're all archived every week. We'll change to something else, but of course we're trying to touch on any and everything that deals with people's
yeah,
current.
And you know what? Another thing is you both sound like you're African American.
We're a little bit of everything. we have all ethnicities here, actually. I'm African-American, yes, but we have European, Anglo, you know, we're mixed here, so.
What I'm saying is, you know what, we're all related.
Oh, yeah, so, oh, yeah.
Here I am, a white man, telling you I'm airing out my dirty laundry to you, and I'm sure that some of you could identify.
Oh, yeah, someone can always identify, of course.
Yeah, and we have to see what is doing this to us. What is it about this whole thing about belief and faith that this is happening to our families? So we really do, it's a very patriarchal system, and we have to start seeing, you know, where did we lose our mother?
This is true.
Right.
This is true. Yeah,
and
we have a problem.
You know, yeah, that is what I think. Not
right.
Believe, but that's what I think. And you don't have to agree with me.
Right.
You know?
You know, one of the things that I often say to people, you know, if I meet somebody that just seems like they've had problems in their life, I jokingly say they must not have been breastfed by their mother. You know, like they're missing that touch of mom.
Yeah.
Well, people, we have less than a minute left in our show.
Go ahead and just thank you. Go ahead and finish out the show.
Yeah, tonight we're going to end. We have a less than a minute left, but we're going to pick this up again next week.
All right.
And we have about 60 seconds left, so I want to thank all of our guests tonight. And you're perfectly welcome to visit us again next week. And I think that this may be a topic that's worth digging in a little bit deeper. So if you'd like, we can continue this next week. And
I'll talk to you all later.
Okay. Thank you so much, and good night, everyone. Deborah, thank you so much for calling in. As I said, give me an email.
I'm trying to log on right now.
Okay. And we will see you all here next week. Thank you so much again. Thank you all to all of our callers. Great show. I'm sure that we've reached out to quite a few people tonight, and hopefully more people will have that encouragement through our call. We have 10 seconds left, so good night. I will talk to you all next week.
Your name?
Maria.
Thanks, Maria. Good night.
I am Maria. Good night, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
And good night to everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night, Rebecca.
Good night. Good night. We got callers from all over tonight.
So many callers.
Tony was on there.
And yep, she called in.